Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Wednesday, May 1st. I'm Ray Graff. History today, and we welcome back Catherine Sheehan, the executive director of the Hart Clewitt Museum and the Rensselaer County and Troy City historian. A native of Troy, Kathy has lectured on various local history topics, including Uncle Sam, the Underground Railroad, public health, women's suffrage, agriculture, and the changing landscape of the county. We'll take your calls. We'll talk history, 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551, or email us at voxpop@wamc.org, or you can call 800-348-2551. It's history. Catherine Sheehan and your calls coming up right after the news. Oh, hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. Joining us again today is Catherine Sheehan, executive director of the Hart Clewitt Museum and the Rensselaer County and Troy City historian. A native of Troy, Kathy's career at the museum began as an intern from the public history program at SUNY Albany. She's currently working on a publication entitled Architecture Worth Saving in Rensselaer County Revisited 50 years later. Catherine's lectured on many local history and topics. I should have written in the script, many local history topics. And recently has been a location and historic background advisor for The Gilded Age on HBO. She's appeared on national, international TV, including the History Channel, C-SPAN, Russian and Japanese TV. Kathy can be seen on giving tours through downtown Troy, Oakwood Cemetery, and it's great to have her on the show. If you have a history question, we had a great time last time, and there were a lot of calls. Call now, 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551. Catherine Sheehan, welcome back. How are you?
Hello, Ray. It's great to be back in the 518. I just came back from a great train trip across the country.
You went on a train trip?
I know.
Tell me all about it briefly. Oh,
it was wonderful.
Really?
Literally went from, took the Lakeshore Limited, which basically follows the Erie Canal. So, you know, it's all about the history when you're coming out there.
Do you have to change to the Empire Builder in Chicago?
We did go to Chicago, but we actually got out of the California Zephyr.
I don't know that one.
That one's a little bit farther south than the Empire Builder. This is one, the Zephyr runs into Denver. And which is very cool. And then you go up the Sierra Nevadas, you're crossing, go over Truckee where you hear about the Donner Party. Over through
Did it make you hungry? No.
There was like 4,000 feet of snow up there.
It's so, you know,
through it, which is so cool. And then you come down, we got to Sacramento. And then we took the Coast Starlight all the way down the coast.
Which they tell me is the most spectacular.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
It was really amazing. You've got the Pacific Ocean on one side and just incredible farmland and all the, oh my God, agriculture. We actually saw SpaceX is down near Edwards Air Force Base. We saw a rocket shooting off.
Oh, like, the train?
From the train.
Oh,
I mean,
my
gosh. You can't beat that.
No, that's pretty exciting. No underwriting from Amtrak here, right?
No underwriting.
We went years ago, 50 years ago now, with my family. I forget the train, maybe it was the Empire Builder to Chicago.
No, Lakeshore Limited to Chicago.
Right, and then the Empire Builder across the top of the country.
Yes, which I've done that one.
And then I think we took the Hiawatha back, which I don't even think is available
anymore. My friend Barbara Urban, who is the one who plans these amazing trips, and she is like the queen of Amtrak travel. So
it's funny. It's not a train show. But
It's not a train show. But,
I could talk like...
But you know what's great, though, about what's really interesting is, you know, you don't see that kind of terrain when you're flying, I don't know, 60,000 feet in the air, wherever it is, planes fly up that high. You know, you're really going, I mean, you're seeing the desert and the terrain and the towns. And all your fourth grade history comes back. Your geography just comes rolling back to you every time you're going across the country. It's just a great way to travel. You meet the most interesting people.
Remember going past the huge open copper mine in Butte, Montana. And that's still burned in my memory, you know?
Yeah.
You know, do me a favor, Catherine Sheehan. The next time Jean Gagnon, our travel expert, is on, I want you to call in. She's a little, when I bring up train, she says, let's move on.
I know. And I always think, no, Jean. So, yeah.
She'll be on in a couple of weeks.
That's good.
I got a question about Rensselaer / Rensselaer. So there's this big discussion, there's two different pronunciations, the town and the county. It all stems from the patroon, right?
Right.
Okay, and he was what? Peter Van...
Killian Van Rensselaer.
Okay.
He is the one who never was here. Killian Van Rensselaer owns the whole manor of Rensselaerswyck.
Okay.
Both sides of the river.
Can you answer a question?
I hope.
Director of the Hart Clewitt Museum and Rensselaer County and Troy City Historian. Why would you say the city Rensselaer and then the county Rensselaer? Why? Or the other way around?
I wish I could answer that. And I could make something up, but that wouldn't work.
What's the proper way to say it?
We always say Rensselaer.
Yeah.
I mean, I say Rensselaer County. And usually when you talk about the city of Rensselaer, it tends to, and I don't know if that's just over the years that people kind of shorten it. It's certainly spelled the same way. Rensselaer, Rensselaer are both spelled. And then you have Rensselaer Polytechnic Institute.
Do you say RPI. Rensselaer or Rensselaer?
I say Rensselaer.
Okay, I'm very confused.
I know.
I try to go real fast.
Rensselaer County.
Catherine Sheehan is our guest today. She is the Rensselaer County and Troy City historian and the Hart Clewitt Museum Executive Director. Number here is 800-348-2551. If you want to talk history of the region with us, you can email voxpop@wamc.org. Well, on this Dutch bent, there's still so much Dutch heritage in this area. I mean, just street names and everything else.
Exactly. You know, what is funny? I mean, you think about all the things that we cut. Did you have a cookie today? That's a Dutch word.
Really?
Yes. Yes. I mean, or maybe you went outside and sat on the front stoop.
I did, and had a cookie at the same time.
And had a cookie at the same time.
It was double Dutch. There you are.
Double Dutch. So, you know, all these kind of words, we talked about this last time. I remember somebody called in and corrected us about how you say the Wijnenskil or the Postenkil or the Normanskil. The kill, that part, that's
creek.
The Dutch word for creek.
Right.
You know, so we still have so many, even though, you know, certainly a lesser Dutch presence is maybe not right in front of our face, but all these things are still there. And amazingly, we have some great Dutch architecture left, certainly, and on this side of the river as well. In Rensselaer County, just across the river from here, down a little as Castleton is the Staats house.
Oh, yeah, beautiful.
Beautiful down there.
I love that style.
Oh, God. Yeah,
there was a great book written on architecture in Albany. There have been several, but I remember one in particular, and I wish I could remember the title. I took a great Albany history course years and years ago. But it had these beautiful old buildings, some of which made it into the 1900s before they tore them down. A few are still with us today.
Oh, yeah, there are. More than you would think.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, some have been covered over a little bit, some have been decided, but there's a lot. You know, that 9J, you know, down in Castleton, Skodak, you know, you can see there's several down there, as well as the Staats house, which, of course, that's on private land, but it sits right on the river.
No, yeah, it's beautiful.
And it's still owned by the same family, all these generations.
Isn't that amazing?
It's like 8-9 generations now that have owned from this same family. They have their own burial ground. They have their own little cemetery on the site and everything, and it's just incredible.
I went to the New Netherlands Institute website today and kind of looked at they have a great timeline of New Netherland. And a lot of violence, 80-year wars, 30-year wars, all these things going on in Europe, and this was sort of ancillary to it and then gained its own life of its own. Now, the original patroon ship, they landed for somewhere near where the Port of Albany is now. And there was a trading post.
A trading post, right.
1614.
Right,
And so they eventually, in the 1620s, the patroon ship began.
Right.
So how big was that when it started?
Oh, well, it encompassed everything. I said on both sides, all of Rensselaer County, all of Albany County. I think it crept a little bit, maybe into Columbia County, and then what's on this side, Green, just south of here. Is that Green? And even a little on the other side of the Helderbergs.
I mean, that's a lot.
You've got rents. You know, people. It's a great. We get phone calls all the time, and people call up, and they're actually, and we say, it's Rensselaer County Historical Society, but they're looking for Rensselaerville, which of course is way up at the top of the mountains, Thatcher Park up that way, you know, in the Helderbergs. So. But still, Rensselaer, it's spanning both, you know, mountains to mountains. So, I mean, we have, once it was split up and you put the Hudson River as the dividing line, we're 640 square miles for
amazing
for Rensselaer County.
I mean, one of the beautiful things, I assume, for a historian like yourself, boy, those Dutch kept records. I mean, God, there's, if you want to look up the history, all you got to do is look at the lawsuits and look at some of these other grievances. You can find out so much.
So much. Or you have to talk to Charlie Gehring, who is amazing. He's with the New York State Library, who has been transcribing. I mean, it's been a labor of love that Charlie's been doing this. He's going to be honored on June 7th. They're going to be celebrating the 400th anniversary of Fort Orange. And
cool.
And they're going to be honoring Charlie.
You know, tell me about the that progress. It's basically the largest repository of Dutch documents, right?
Yeah, in the United States anyway.
Yeah. And so when did that start, and how many documents are we talking about?
God, thousands and thousands. I couldn't even begin to tell you how much the linear feet is, and I know even some were destroyed in the Capitol fire that happened in 1909 or 1911, somewhere around there. So there's things that are charred they've been just doing this incredible work all these years. It really, as it is, it's a labor of love that he's been transcribing. And we just got a really interesting, one of the other archivist librarians over at the New York State Library sent a transcription over to the museum just the other day about witchcraft.
Really?
Yes.
So now give me a time frame of this.
1793.
Oh, cool. So it's late. Yeah.
Yes. And there was a schoolmaster who apparently was doing some nefarious things. He was accused and then he was crushed.
Well.
Yeah, they killed him.
That's hardly an investigation.
Hardly an investigation, yeah. And they were setting, so there's all this kind of information back sent from the sheriff, who was Albert Pauling. Before he became mayor of Troy, he was the county sheriff. And I had never seen, that's the first time, we've talked about this before. I never know what is going to show up at the door or who's going to call me. And all these years, I've never come across anything with witchcraft, like Salem. I mean, it's similar in scope to that. And I thought, wow. This is really cool. It's really kind of sad what happened, but
I think that what you do is so exciting.
It is exciting.
I think you and I might be the only ones who think that it's so exciting. Let's take a break. 800-348-2551. 800-348-2551. Catherine Sheehan is here, Executive Director of the Hart Clewitt Museum and the Rensselaer County and Troy City Historian. We'll be back. What a brain police. That's Ed Palermo doing the music of Frank Zappa here. 800-348-2551 is the number. And Catherine Sheehan is our guest. History is on the table today. And before we get too far into the program, just want to let you know that according to what I'm reading, today is one of two public media giving days. So like we don't raise money often, we raise money three times a year. But this is special. This is nationwide. And if you got a couple extra bucks, throw it our way. WAMC.org is the website. You can click donate now. We're a nonprofit, of course. We rely on your support no matter how much you can give. Could be $2, could be $1,000, whatever you want. Now, we do a fun drive. I'm not going to belabor this now, but it is public media giving day today and tomorrow. If you got a couple bucks and you want to do it, we'd love it. WAMC.org is the place to go. Our guest today is Catherine Sheehan. A couple emails here. You ready?
Okay.
I'll put you on the spot here. Uh-oh. This is from Ben in Providence. Can you tell us anything about how our region went from a Dutch settlement to an English one? I only learned something vague in school about the Dutch being here first, and then suddenly in the Revolutionary War, suddenly it's an English colony. Can you fill in the gap? Well, we talked about those long wars.
Those long wars. Yeah, between the French and Indian Wars and then the American Revolution.
The 30-year war and the 80-year
war. The King George's War. Right. Yeah. And then the English came in pretty soon. And then, yes, they started taking over the lands.
But the Dutch got it back, right? So 1670s,
they honored the patroonships, which is, I think, the really interesting part of this area is this kind of lease, this landholding thing that was done by the Van Rensselaer family, you know.
Yeah.
And so you basically became a tenant farm. One of my ancestors was a tenant farmer to Stephen Van Rensselaer.
So you have documents probably on that going
back to
the original time.
And so you had to pay your rent and chickens and wheat, and you had to bring your things to the grist mill that belonged to the Van Rensselaer family, and of course there's a dollar amount equated to that, and that was going strong until Stephen Van Rensselaer dies in the early 1830s, 19th century.
Yeah,
and he was known as the good patroon because he didn't collect. At some point, he stopped collecting these back rents. Well, then his descendants say, "Hey, wait a minute! This is ridiculous. Yeah. We need our money back." And it started something called the anti-rent wars. In the late 1830s, 1840s, and it settled out for years. This went on.
I'm glad you brought that up because Michael and Latham said, "Why did the patroon not fight for the property in the anti-rent wars?"
Well, they tried to. They had the sheriff coming out, and that's actually what happened. They would grab a hold of these deputies, and the people were just, they're like, "We're not leaving this land. This has been ours. We farm this now. This is, Stephen did not collect from us." And it's like, "No, we're not doing this anymore." And so they went after him, and they tarred and feathered. A couple people were killed. Tarred and feathered.
Wow.
And in protest, there was this whole thing. They dressed up, as they call it, the Calico Indians to go against the patroons, to protest the patroons trying to come back and collect their back rents. So, ultimately, it wasn't really completely settled, the lawsuits and things like that, at least through the courts, until I think after the Civil War, it might have been the last one. But if somebody actually goes back far enough and you do your title search when you buy your property, odds are you're going to go back far enough to find something
so amazing.
That would go back to, Stephen Van Rensselaer and owning land. Many properties, yeah.
Well, we know that, the Dutch were here very, very early, and they had the trading port, and then finally they were on that little island there in the Hudson.
Pepskenny? No.
Well, they called it something. It had a couple of different names where they tried. There was flooding, and it failed, and they moved around the area. But then English took over, and I think at some point there was a settlement in one of these long wars, and the Dutch got to be in control again. And this is 1670s, maybe, but by 1686, Albany, as we know it today, was incorporated.
Was incorporated.
Right? Dongan Charter.
The Dongan Charter. Dongan Charter. Yeah.
It's so cool to go back because as we live our lives moment to moment, it's hard to realize that we are part of a thread that goes back.
Yeah, that far.
And you look at these documents, you realize, oh my gosh.
Well, we look at the city of Troy was owned by Jacob van der Heyden.
Yeah.
And he owns it was Jacob and his brothers. There were three farms that basically make up the entire length of the city of Troy, and where what is considered like downtown Troy was Jacob's. And, he had control over that, and he wanted to keep it farmland, but then after the American Revolution, all these Connecticut Yankees came in, including, again, other relatives of mine. they came into town, and Stephen Ashley, who was he's like, "Look, you got to lay this out. This is amazing. You've got basically a port here. You've got the tide, the changes all the way up to the first federal lock. Jump on this bandwagon." So he convinced him to lay it out in a grid. Much like Philadelphia, so that's why Troy has all the one-way streets that everybody's complaining about.
So annoying.
So, but we have alleyways too, and the alleys, which Albany got rid of a great deal of.
Oh, I think
alleys.
There are a few alleys.
There's a
in
few,
Albany.
Maybe there's still a few left, but
stumbling.
We have a really nice grid of our the alleys, and so there he set it up, and it was called Van der Heyden's, and then they took it away from him in 1789 when Troy becomes a village, and they we want to follow the Greek, all the wonderful Greek that they named it Troy.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah.
Is there a horse there, big horse?
Yeah, I know. We're waiting for the Trojan horse to come in.
Dennis in Greenfield writes, "Dad has a military granite headstone since 1968 with lichen and algae now. Still very intact. I want to gently clean it. I've scraped with a toothbrush, a credit card, but needs more cleaning. Is weak bleach okay?
I don't think so. There is a wonderful website. There's a great guy. His name is Joe Farinini. He does gravestone matter. He does a lot of the cemetery restoration around in this area. And on his webpage, you can find what are the safest way to clean. Sometimes it really is just soap and water.
Yeah.
And just take a brush and just clean that off. There are some other kind of mixes of chemicals, which I don't know off the top of my head.
Well,
so
D3 is one that Dennis mentions. That, he says a stone product called something like D3.
Yeah. I just would be very, very careful about really investigate it further. Go to Joe's website because anybody wants to go talk to him now. He's sitting at New Mountain Night City and he's preserving stones in New Mount Ida Cemetery.
Oh, really?
As we speak.
Well, I hope he has his radio on.
I know if he has his radio on. Yeah, but you know, it is. And those early stones, you know, and the climate change and things like that they weather these stones. But you could do worse things by putting the wrong things on it. Is my point.
Good point.
Yeah.
Number here is 800-348-2551. The email address is voxpop@wamc.org. voxpop@wamc.org. And we'll get back to the email shortly, but let's go to Pat in Albany. Pat, you're on.
Good afternoon. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
My husband and I have been doing his family's research, and they were from Brainerd. And we found his great-grandmother's headstone and burial place, and we found records in the library in Chatham that showed her date of death, but we have no idea of anything about his great-grandfather. We can't find any records at all on him. Is there a cemetery in Brainerd or around Brainerd that he could possibly be that might have records of the, or does the Rensselaer County Historic Society have any kind of records that we could look up for his death?
We do. Thanks for the call, Pat. Yes, we have. I was just out in Brainerd the other day. There are several small cemeteries in the Brainerd area. But yes, there's a couple of things you can do. You could go to RootsWeb, which does have a lot of birth and death records and things like that. Birth records at that really early period are going to be, you know, almost impossible to find a birth record unless you know the religious denomination of the person, and you might find a baptismal record or something like that, you know, if they're like in the Dutch Reformed Church or something like that. But our research library is open Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. And all you have to do is go to HartCluett.org. And you can click on the little link that says research, and then you can sign up for a library appointment, and we'll be happy to get you through. We have a full genealogy library.
Oh, boy.
So, yeah.
Oh, wonderful. Yeah.
So, we're right in downtown Troy. Yeah, no,
okay.
For sure. And if you can't, if you live too far away, we do mail-in requests as well.
All right, Pat, thanks a lot for the call. The number is 800-348-2551. Don't you get nervous? Oh, these books and documents are ancient. Not ancient, but they're all really, really old. Don't you get worried someone will come in and knock them out and do over on top of a bunch of piles?
You know what's really fascinating about the earlier documents is they're in better shape than this piece of paper that's
sitting
on your desk.
That is so interesting. Why?
Well, because they have a very high rag content to them. They're cloth.
Yeah.
So and the whatever they, you know, what they used to use for the ink and things have held up. You could look at a record from 1792 and it's perfectly readable.
So,
and then you look at one that was after post-Civil War when they started using wood pulp, and that paper's yellowing, it gets brittle. I don't want anybody to touch it. I don't want anybody to breathe
That's
around
so
it.
So interesting.
Yeah.
Catherine Sheehan's our guest today. It's history. 800-348-2551. 800-348-2551. I've been going back and forth with Bethlehem Town historian Bill Ketzer about just histories of various parts of the town. And one thing that he impressed upon me is that there were large plots of land given to veterans of the Revolutionary War. And that is fascinating. Did that happen on the other side of the river
yes.
as well?
Oh, sure. Yeah. Well, yeah, because that was, yeah, you proved that you had your, that you served.
Yeah.
You know, which that was kind of interesting. It's like how they were really following through to see did the soldier really
Yeah.
Serving the Battle of Bennington or, you know, things like that. Yeah.
So cool.
Yeah. So they could get their plot of land. Yeah.
Number here is 800-348-2551. The email is voxpop@wamc.org. Carol writes, history of houses called the Terrace that were located across from Health Center on 7th Avenue. That's it. No question mark or anything.
Oh, that was Gail Place. Oh, what's her name? Carol.
Carol.
Thank you for sending that in. It's so funny. I was just looking at an incredible photograph of when they were tearing down what was the old technical institute that is now went out to what is now Hudson Valley Community College. And they were over right in front of Gail Place. And it was this full row of buildings. And they're probably from the 1830s and 40s, but they were a lot were torn down, of course, during urban renewal. That was kind of near where the county office building, for those of you who might be familiar with that, kind of at the end of State Street.
Oh, yeah.
So, but we do have that photograph, and it's really pretty amazing to see that many. You know, you really lose perspective when these things are all clear, and you think, how did they fit these buildings in this spot?
Yeah.
And then you go, wow, there's like 15 of them along there. Yeah,
you go into some old neighborhoods that are more or less the same, and you say, wow, it's amazing. Right. Things were smaller then. Everything was just a little bit not supersized. I think that's a difference.
They do, but you look at the block that Troy's Union Station sat on was filled the whole block between Broadway and Fulton Street and between 6th and what was used front of it. That was a huge, huge train station.
Yeah.
You know, and you look at it now and think, how did that fit out there?
You know, regarding these buildings that were torn down during what they called urban renewal, it must drive you nuts to some extent. But is there a point where you say, well, okay, that building just can't, it's got to go.
Yeah. There's definitely some buildings that needed to go. Yeah. Union Station being one of them, the Boardman Building, Troy Theater. You know, I can think of several buildings that should have come down. But then there were some other ones there is a shelf life.
Time marches on eventually.
To some things, but
our guest today is Catherine Sheehan. It's History on Vox Pop. 800-348-2551 is our number. And the email address is voxpop@wamc.org. Mike in Saratoga writes, perhaps you could speak about the wonderful Burden Ironworks Museum and all the beautiful Tiffany stained glass in Troy.
Oh, yes. It's so funny. Mike, I just had breakfast with Susan Wyatt, who is the director of the Gateway. And the Burden Ironworks headquarters is our sister museum. They actually were formed from the Historical Society back in like 1974. And they deal with the industrial heritage of the whole capital region, not just Troy, but it is centered on where the steamworks were for the Burden Ironworks. Now, most people kind of think of the Burden Ironworks, who at least have been around here a long time, about the giant Burden water wheel that was in the 1830s up on the hill as you're kind of going up towards near Hudson Valley,
yep,
over that way on Mill Street.
I've seen the picture, but
yeah,
I've
seen the picture. Well, yeah, there's a great mural. When you come off the Minnehans Bridge, there's a beautiful mural that shows the water wheel. Well, that, and people, I think, have this misconception that that water wheel is outside and people saw it. It was actually inside a building.
Uh-huh.
And so by the time that people see the photographs, the late 19th century photographs, it was already in ruins at that point.
Huh.
There was a wonderful student at RPI called Ferris,
yeah,
George Washington Ferris, and they studied that the water wheel, because it was this, like, at one time it was the largest overshot water wheel in the world.
That's amazing.
And it's where they say he got his inspiration to create the Ferris wheel.
No way.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Is that great?
Yeah, that is great. The connections.
So, right now they're finishing some construction at the Burden Ironworks, but they'll be opening soon, and they have an amazing, amazing industrial history there.
Do you remember that TV show, Connections?
Oh, God, yeah. Oh, God. I love that show.
I got thinking about that and the connection to the Ferris wheel, and then the old billiard ball factory here on Delaware Avenue.
Yeah, Albany.
Which was there forever. I mean, you drive by and it kind of looked a little spooky. And and the connection to nitroglycerin, and because that was in the original, you saw that show, right? Where the original billiard balls would explode periodically. And that led to armaments and everything else.
Right.
It's very fascinating. Yeah. Let's go back to the phones now. 800 248-2551 is the number. It's History. We're just going everywhere, meandering with Catherine Sheehan through time and space. Joan in Schenectady, you're on.
Hello, Ray.
Hello.
And I love this. This is a great segue. I'm interested in all of the hidden waterways that go underneath cities. I found many of the ones here in Schenectady. But I'm interested in what are some of the exciting waterways in Troy's history that are hidden from view nowadays?
Oh, great. Okay. Yeah, great question, Joan.
I love that, Joan.
Well, one of my favorite stories or waterways, a lot of people are familiar with Freer Park and Troy's big golf course there. Well, the Piscataway Kill Creek runs through that. And if you cross over Oakwood Avenue, it disappears. And it actually goes underground and comes out down through North Central Troy and out down near where the first Federal Lock is. And the Eddy family had their big house there. And actually, the house is still there. It's the headquarters of the Troy Housing Authority. They made lamp black for stoves and things like that. But they were the ones who invented the ink, not invented the ink, but they had the contract for the ink for the dollar bills for many, many years, well into the, up to 1908 or something like that, like a good portion of the 19th century, the Eddy family. And it was a secret formula. Titus Eddy was the person who created, the formula. His son James kept the father's secret, and it died with James. And so nobody knows what the secret formula was for this, for the ink, for the bills. But apparently it was the best because the U.S. government was kept buying it. You don't see the Piscataway Kill until, you're either seeing it at Freer Park or at the Hudson River.
But I love that, though. I mean, they buried so many kills. I think if you drive along, if you're in a boat and you go along the Hudson on either side, you'll see where these come out. They're still flowing, but they're... And if you look at a real old map, Joan, you'll see them all. And I think about that a lot, too. I got to take a break here, but thank you very much. Our guest today is Catherine Sheehan. It's History, 800-348-2551. And we'll be back. Gatton there on the guitar. 800-348-2551 is our number. Catherine Sheehan joins us today. Catherine is the Hart Clewitt Museum Executive Director, as well as the Rensselaer County and Troy City Historian. A couple emails here, and then we will go back to the phones, Kathy. This is from Andrew. Do you know any history about Glass Lake in Rensselaer County? Was there a glass factory there in the past? It's my understanding this lake is man-made and about 80 feet deep in the middle.
Yes, and I'm so glad you mentioned it. Yeah, that is my ancestors' stomping grounds.
Yeah?
Yes, up on the Glass Lake of Crooked. Tige's Bistro. Kevin's place. That was the old Glass Lake, the hotel. And on the upper floors, a lot of times is when all the glass workers were in, they stayed there. And you can see if you go behind his restaurant, and you can actually see the dam that goes along the Glass Lake. And yes, it was glass, lake glass, and it was a beautiful shade of green. Now, if it was because of the sand that they were using or somewhere in the process. And they started there in the very late 18th century and went into the 19th century. And then a couple times it blew up. And I think the last time, I think around 1850, I think it was about it. That was there. And when it exploded, all this pieces of molten glass went everywhere. And so a lot of people out there, every once in a while, if they're digging through their dirt, they'll find a piece of Glass Lake glass. Yeah. And Bob Moore, who is our Sand Lake Town historian, has a nice selection of that. If you go to the town hall And over by and where the library is and stuff, there's a whole thing on Glasswing. Oh yeah, no, most definitely. And over in Cape Cod, there's the big glass museum in Sandwich, and they have glass.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, which is great.
Catherine Sheehan's our guest. It's History Today. Dan writes in. Now, Dan was actually on the show yesterday. I was not here. I had stuff going on, but Joe hosted, and Dan DeLore is a fellow at Vermont Law and Graduate School. He focuses on climate change and green energy and
stuff. Listen to his show.
But he says, I have a non-climate change question. During the Revolution, I don't even know if you can answer this. Maybe you can. During the Revolutionary War, what percentage of the local population were Tories? And what percentage were supporters of the Revolution?
Oh, I love this question, Dan.
Okay.
One of the areas, if you're looking up in the Brunswick area and going up to Pittstown out that way, as you're getting close, there are many Tories. There's even a Tory Hill Road. So they're actually more than you would think. Not everybody was a patriot.
Interesting.
There was quite a few people fighting for the crown. I couldn't give you an exact number, but it's pretty significant. Some went to Canada, ended up leaving. Some came back. Some didn't. They were fighting. Like, say, I'm just picking the Battle of Bennington because that was fought in Rensselaer County in Wallumsack. And, shout out to History Day at Hoosick History Fair, which is going to be May 18th. So my friend Joyce Brewer, who's doing a great job for that. Go see them 10 to 3. And so you had these farmers that are fighting other farmers. One's on the Tory side, one's in. Then it all got done. It is amazing. So, I love that.
And, you mentioned, I don't know what you said that reminded me, but there's a great road as you're going out to toward Hoosick and toward Bennington. Is it 7?
Yeah, it might be 7. Yeah, it's 7.
Odd Fellows Lane. I got to find out more about this sometime.
The International Order of Odd Fellows.
What's the deal?
It was a fraternal organization, and one of their main things that they're kind of like the Masons.
Yeah,
like that. One of their main tenets was to bury the dead, which is interesting. So people that were unable to afford to be buried, they buried the dead. But they did all sorts of things, and there are Odd Fellow halls everywhere.
Really?
Yes. Yes, I can think
I don't get
at least 4 of them in Rensselaer County. I've seen some over here in Albany County. No, they were big.
What's the time period on that?
Oh, they're around certainly by the 1830s. Oh. I know at least from there. But I think the Odd Fellows are still.
That's
an active organization. Yeah.
Number here is 800-348-2551. Catherine Sheehan is here to talk history. Let's go back to the phones. Jeff is in Albany. Jeff.
Hey.
Hello.
I wanted to. Can you hear me?
Yeah, go ahead.
I want to tell you how Albany got its name.
Okay.
Great. Tell us.
Henry Hudson was coming up the Hudson River in his boat, the Half Moon. Kind of coincidence they had the same name. And he got as far as he could in his boat, the Half Moon, right where we are now, and it got too shallow for them to go any farther, and he turned to his son and he said, "Well, that's all, Benny."
I knew we were coming to that.
Drive safely. Thank you for that. Let's go to.
I knew that was coming.
Chris in Johnstown. Chris, you're on.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. I hope my question is on topic.
Okay.
I am a transplant here in Fulton County. I'm from the other side of the state, but everything around here is try on this, try on that. And I was wondering, where is the origin of Tryon County from?
You might have to take that for homework. That's a little west of where
you... I think that's a little homework. It's a little west, out of my... I wish I could help you on that one, but that is, it's a little bit...
Cool. Yeah, that's
it.
We'll look into that one for the next one. Chris, thanks a lot. Appreciate you calling in. 800-348-2551. Let's go to Joe in Coxsackie. Joe!
Hey, how are you doing today?
Good. Welcome.
Hi, Kathy. I wanted to tell you about briefly two of my favorite spots in downtown Troy that are about 100 yards apart from each other: the Freer Building and the Green Island Bridge.
Yes,
you're very familiar with the Freer Building, right?
I'm sorry.
You're familiar with the.
Absolutely familiar with the Freer Building. It's one of my favorite buildings too. Yeah,
we both probably shopped in that building when we were children back. At least 50 years ago or so.
Right, because
you remember this. You remember that they had the skylights with the stained glass in them.
So it's a wonderful, and there's great photos online. When that building was completed, it was around 1906, I think, give or take a year. Yeah. And it has this incredible iron arcade space in the middle. And at the base of the first level, there were these beautiful bronze Tiffany urns. Mm. Well, when the store closed in around 1963, and they were doing it over for, some of you remember, Peerless East, when they were going to part of the urban renewal things that were going on first. And those urns ended up coming to our museum, which are on permanent display. You can see them when you come over to the museum. But you can still go into the Freer Building, and with the exception of just that first level of the stairway, the whole rest of the arcade is still completely intact with that beautiful wrought iron and cast iron railing that goes up to that huge skylight.
Oh,
so
cool.
It's really quite impressive. Yeah.
Right. It really is.
And the Green Island Bridge, of course, is that you mentioned the Green Island Bridge. Of course, that's at least the third bridge on that site. The first one was a wooden covered bridge that burnt down in May of 10th of 1862, just during a spark from a railroad caught fire. And it really was a firestorm, and it destroyed a great deal of downtown Troy, almost the same footprint where urban renewal took everything down.
Huh.
About 800 buildings, amazingly.
800 buildings.
Yeah.
Wow.
Amazingly, only 13 people died during that. But and there was so much money in Troy at that time, it was rebuilt within 9 months.
Wow.
Yeah, incredible. In the middle of the Civil War. Yes. Yeah, and then they built another wooden bridge, and that was taken down, and they built the Black Railroad Bridge. And, of course, we know what happened to that on March 15th of 1977, if you are.
I remember.
The day the bridge went down at 2:20 in the afternoon.
Yeah. In fact, you have pictures of that on your Hart Kluwer website, do you not?
Yes.
All right, Joe, thanks a lot. 800-348-2551 is our number. Catherine Sheehan is here, Executive Director of the Hart Kluwer Museum. Anything new on the website since I've been there?
We have a brand new exhibit on voting and democracy. It just opened a month ago. Curator Samantha Mahosky just installed, and it's looking at, oh my gosh, the whole history of really wonderful voting issues from the 1700s right up to the present.
Very interesting.
Yeah, very interesting.
And have you made any good blog posts? I really do enjoy them.
I know. I think there should be another one coming up soon.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Let's go back to our phones here. And Amy is in Troy. Hello, Amy.
Hi there.
Oh, boy. Do I know you?
Does that sound like Amy Halloran?
That is Amy Halloran.
Hello.
I heard you, and I said, I have to have some questions to ask,
okay.
And I actually do.
Okay.
I'm very curious right now about the trolley system in the whole Capital District, but in particular, I'm thinking about a woman I know who lived behind me in 1924 and would have gone to Albany to the Normal College. So I'm wondering how I would begin to research her trail from the Hillside neighborhood in Troy through trolleys to Albany.
So she would have taken after she walked down the hill, she would have taken the trolley down. She could have taken the trolley, or just really from where she was, she would have just walked to Union Station, and you would take the train down across the river, down the Maiden Lane Bridge, down in Rensselaer, would have crushed you into Albany. Yeah, that's most likely the way she would have done that. So you're really going down
the
to
trolley,
Little Italy. Well, yeah, you had. Well, it was light rail. I mean, it would have been the regular train.
Right, but people would have gone to the central location. They wouldn't like go down to River Street and try to pick it up.
They could have
closer to their home.
The trolley did run. There was the Lansingburg trolley that came down there. Yeah, no, she could have gotten that as well. But
probably
just as fast for her to walk the other couple blocks and hop into Union Station.
You know, the business of the trolleys in Albany and Troy and everything else, it's interesting stuff. And there are a lot of people who have done a lot of research on that. I know that you can still see the tracks in spots of Albany.
Yeah.
And it wasn't that long ago that they were running. I mean, they ran a long, long time.
They did. Yeah. The last trolleys in Troy were 1929.
There you go.
Yeah.
Hey, Amy.
1929.
Yeah. Well, then the buses came out.
Thank you for calling, Amy. Mm-hmm. When are you on again?
Oh, Ray, I think it's not till October, but maybe we can scheme up a special special Ray edition, Ray Kathy edition cookie.
Oh, I see.
Before then.
All right.
She still always be Hermits.
Oh, does she? Hey, Amy, thanks a lot for the call. 800-348-2551. Suzanne is in Furabush. Suzanne.
Yes.
Hey, Suzanne, can you turn your radio down just a little bit?
Oh, absolutely.
Thanks.
I'll shut you right off on the radio. Okay. Sorry about that.
Yeah.
Okay. Yes. I have a question about how to find out if my grandfather, who came to this country from or around 1907, if he, in fact, worked in the foundry at the Burton Ironworks. And family history has that he moved here from Poland, and he and his brother both worked at a foundry. And so they lived in Waterville, which would have been West Troy at that point, I think. And so they couldn't have gone too far to be in a foundry. And if not the Burton Ironworks, what other how can I find out what other foundries were around? And that's my question.
Well, thanks for the question, Suzanne. We actually have papers from the Burton Ironworks Company. So we have a discharge book. And actually, that discharge book is online through the TIGS, Troy Irish Genealogy Society webpage. And you go and you, if you even just Google TIGS, it will take you to that. And you will see a resources page. There was a wonderful volunteer. Her name was Betty Shaver. She did that work for us and set up that index of all the people mm-hmm. who were discharged from there. But you could also, make an appointment to come down and we can look at we have some in early employee records. You could also check through the city directories. A lot of times someone's name would be listed. You might have your name and it would have your occupation right next to it. And they might say a puddler or a molder.
What's a puddler?
A puddler. Oh, these are all those different jobs making iron products and things like that. So, So there's a lot of different, avenues for you to go. The other great free website to check out if you can't come down is called FultonHistory.com. And that is a free newspaper database. And just plug in your ancestor's name.
That is a great website.
It's a great website. Yeah. Put it in as an exact search, and you won't believe what will come up.
All right, Suzanne, thanks a lot. You know, you have all these documents. People can go and sign in and look at them. Is there an effort, or has there already been an effort to digitize these?
Oh, that's such a great question. We work on it. Right now we're working a lot of photographs. We have probably 15,000 or 20,000 photographs in our collection alone. Just photographs.
Yeah.
So when you're looking at kind of business papers and things, it's a lot. It's expensive to do, and it's very time consuming. It's not a matter of just digitizing. That takes 2 seconds to throw something on the a couple of minutes. It's creating the metadata that takes time to be able to search, so that you can go online on Google and plug in, and then find all these documents. That's why all these say, and even the big boys, Smithsonian, they don't have all their stuff digitized either. No.
Well, I mean, this is
Library of Congress.
Intern work. I mean, they're all these kids today. They're very sharp and savvy with the tech. You started as an intern.
I did.
Give them big assignments. All right. Quickly, Deborah in Rhinebeck. Deborah, you're on.
Yes. Hi. My name is Deborah Schell, S-C-H-E-L-L.
Okay.
I was born in New Orleans. My father and mother both are daughters of the American and fathers of the American Revolution. I'd like information on Christian Schell, S-C-H-E-L-L, who was the architect of Schell Corner, right across from the Beekman Arms.
Oh, way down in Rhinebeck.
Dated 1816. Oh. Yeah, 1816 is the date of that corner. Mm. And in the graveyard, the oldest graves seem to be shells.
Yeah.
And so I'm trying to find out, you know, with the history of my family.
All right, we only have about 30 seconds, but maybe you could point Deborah in the right
direction. Yeah, you need to attract, you know, my counterpart historian down in the Rhinebeck area. I'm sure if you Google, I know Rhinebeck has a historical society down there. So I'm sure you'd be able to get...
Yes, I've been there.
Yeah.
I have been there.
Because that's way far from...
I made an appointment, but I haven't had any luck there.
Oh. You could make a trip up to Albany to the New York State Library and check out the New York State Library. They might have some of that information.
All right, Deborah, we're going to have to let you go there, but thanks for the call. All right, Catherine Sheehan, how do people find out about what's going on at the Hart Cluett?
The best way is to go to our webpage, which is hartcluett.org, and it's HARTCLUETT.org.
It's a fun website.
It gets to our website, our programs, walking tours, lectures. It's all on there.
Got to say, you are the best. I have so much fun when you're on. So
I had so much fun, too. Thank you so much.
We'll talk to you soon. Support comes from Vision XL Lake Katrine, continuing a commitment to patient care, working to provide optical products and techniques while adhering to safety protocols. Appointments at 845-336-6310. And Avila, independent retirement community featuring a maintenance-free lifestyle with gourmet dining, housekeeping, daily activities, and more. Rental options now available, avilaliving.com. Thanks again to Catherine Sheehan for being here today. Thank you for listening. Love the calls. Love the emails. Many apologies. We had so many emails. We didn't get to them all. Calls as well. Catherine Sheehan will be back. Thanks to Zach Malloy, who will also be back. Andrea Leone screened the calls. Beautiful job, Andrea. Thank you. Tomorrow, this is a topic near and dear to my occluded heart. It's hiking and fitness. Oh, boy. Good thing Alicia Philly knows all about it because I'm not that good at it. We'll see you tomorrow at 2:00.